Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Everyone, welcome to another Turn It A Punk. I'm Damien, and today on the show, we right one of the great wrongs done to Turn It A Punk by technology, and finally, horror is on Turn It A Punk. Years ago, at a festival in Arizona, I recorded an episode with the OGM and Yeti Bones for this podcast, and unfortunately, it was lost to the sands of the desert due to audio problems. And I really enjoyed that conversation. This is way back when, and have since then wanted them to come back on the show. And seeing how music has kind of gone in the last, I don't know, 8 years since they were on the show, 7 years since they were on the show, I think it's more prescient to kind of interview them and have them on here. And I'm really glad we finally got to do it. They have a brand new song called Incline, which you can check out now on all your favorite streaming services. There's a really cool video with some Dead Kennedy references in it as well that you can watch on YouTube and such. And they will be going on tour in October and into November, different parts of the U.S., some places in Europe. You can check out their website, ho9909.com, for dates and links and all that fun stuff. Also, just as a note on this episode, I talk about Vans as like being this great positive thing for music. I should say that Vans does not sponsor this podcast and has not sponsored this podcast in well, since they were pretty much on the show. And people I'm talking about that organized the House of Vans stuff that they used to do, which were these venues all over the world where they would have free shows and these sort of events pop up. That whole team has been fired, which is also, or laid off, I should say, not fired. And that's the reason that this podcast was sponsored by Vans, was because of those people. So when I was talking about Vans, I'm specifically talking about the people that ran House of Vans. This podcast is not affiliated with Vans, so don't think this was some sort of ad. I know years ago we were sponsored by Vans, very passive sponsorship, but that's not what's happening here. It just comes up in the conversation. So I didn't want you to think that I'm trying to slip in some ads or some bullshit. Those are all at the front of the podcast and in the middle and at the end if you keep listening. As always, this podcast is booked and produced by my brother, Tristan Abraham. Thank you, Tristan, for all the hard work you do. You can get in touch with us at turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com or find it at turnedoutapunk on social media platforms. Check out the videos and edits and stuff that get posted on Turn It A Punk's YouTube. And that's it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy horror on Turned Out A Punk. The OGM and Yeti Bones, welcome back to Turned Out A Punk.
What up? What is going on?
It's been a while. Like last time I spoke to you guys, it was before the pandemic, and we were in the middle of a desert in Arizona.
It's been a while.
Been a while. We don't have to worry about I don't know. Did you guys stay in the tents that night at that festival? Where they warned me there might be scorpions in your shoes. So shake out your shoes before you put them on.
No, that was at Forum. We did not stay.
We didn't stay in the tents. We stayed at like this little motel situation. Yeah, that was like kind of on the outskirts. And that shit was a little sketch too, though.
It was a little sketchy. It looked like something from a Western movie or a horror movie, creep into your hotel at night type situation. But it was cool, though.
Yeah.
Well, I had a night terror of a different kind where people on one side of me were having very loud sex and people on the other side of me were talking about how great Drake was. And it was like a hellish sandwich to be stuck in.
Dang, bro. You was going through it, man.
Well, I'm very happy that you guys are back here because as we were just talking off air, the wind got in the way of the microphones that day, and the episode was just completely inaudible. So I've always felt like that was one of the great lost conversations I've gotten to have on this podcast. So
Yeah.
I'm glad we can get another attempt at it.
Yes, 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 yes. Likewise.
Well, I guess I want to start off the way that they started off last time, which is how'd you guys get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across it?
Let me tell you that.
The first time actual punk. Well, let me break it down with more context to actually coming forth with finding out about punk. But when I was a kid, in the 90s, we used to have this show called The Box. I don't know if you ever remember The Box. It just played music videos 24/7.
I'm in Canada, but when I would go down to the States, I would see, bits and pieces of the box. So yeah, I'm aware of it.
Yeah, Channel 96. It was this thing called The Box, and it just had videos 24/7. And then it would have a moment where you could phone in and play the videos. I never did that, but I will always be waiting on like DMX videos to come on, Jay-Z, Big Pun, just all the hip hop and
Oh my
rap
gosh,
videos.
yeah.
Biggie was, popping at the time, Pac. And in between those videos, they would have like System of a Down, Papa Roach, Korn. It was like that era of where the nu metal and MTV was really popping off. And I wasn't really a fan. I was a little confused because it was intriguing, but myself as like a young black kid, I was scared to like actually go to school and be like, yo, you ever heard that song with her this fucking chop suey shit? Like, like I dug it, but I didn't dug it to the point where I was just like, oh, this is dope. I need to
Talk
buy
about it.
it or talk about it or express it. So it kind of swept under the rug, but I was always intrigued. And ages later, when I got older, I started going to events in New York and going to see like local bands and acts and parties. And there was this one group within the early 2000s, I want to say 2010.
2010, 2009, 2010.
Yeah, they was called Ninja Sonic. And it was this like gray area of a lot of things going on in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And it was like Ninja Sonic and another band called Japanther and Cerebral Palsy. And our good homies in Super Chief Gallery were throwing a lot of parties over there. And I was just in that scene for a second. Not a second, but that was the music that was speaking to me. And what introduced me to punk was Ninja Sonic did a cover of a Bad Brains song called Attitude. And at the moment, I didn't know you can cover songs. I didn't know other people could do other people's songs. I was just oblivious to what the fuck was going on. And I remember them playing that song, and shit went fucking crazy. Like, it was a mosh pit in front of me. Motherfuckers was falling over each other. Beer was getting splashed everywhere. It was like the most fun and craziest shit I ever seen at that tender age of 18, 19. And I was like, man, this shit's crazy. And I remember going home and trying to YouTube Ninja Sonic with the song Attitude, and Bad Brains popped up. And at first, I was like, wait, they're doing their song? Like, whose song is it? And then I started looking more into the Bad Brains catalog and all the videos and CBGB's video. And that was literally the turning point. And that shit like blew my fucking mind. And from then on, now, I'm older, late teenager. I'm like, oh, I gotta tell the homies. I gotta tell the community, my boys back home in Jersey. And I put him onto it. And yeah, that was the kicker right there. And from then on, I'm finding out about Minor Threat. I'm finding out about Black Flag and Sex Pistols and GBH and all different kind of subgenres within the punk. So it, from then on, I was just like, this is my jam. This is it.
That moment you talked, and you guys brought it up last time we talked, in Brooklyn, kind of like, I guess like the last hurrah before gentrification kind of swept Brooklyn completely. But there was that moment where there was all those cool spaces on the waterfront or the Market Hotel. And there were a lot of cool, interesting groups popping off, like real different styles. Like there wasn't really a sound to it, but there was a scene.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I think I remember last time we spoke, you talked about going to see the Cro-Mags, My Band and Title Fight. At that show,
that was at the band's warehouse.
Yeah, thing that was an incredible space, and like, obviously, it's corporate sponsored and all that sort of stuff. But the fact that that was like a free show that anyone could go to, it's like corporations are still doing whatever they do, but they're not necessarily having these spaces where you can just go see random ass bands.
Yeah, and that shit was tight. Like I remember that to this day, and they were doing free shows every other week or every week or every month for the summer.
That space was big.
That space was dope. Yeah, and I remember seeing y'all in the Cro-Mags, and I was just like, damn, this shit is fucking powerful. This shit is dope. It was like one of the best nights, man.
It's unfortunate because I feel like those types of spaces, those types of areas are ripe for, you know, I guess like the Vice office went in over top of Death by Audio, right? Like in the end, like this stuff's not going to last. Like it's going to get overtaken.
Yeah, swooped up. Yeah, we'd have been to a bunch of shows at Death by Audio too.
Yeah, it was a great time for DIY and kind of like, that's the thing about punk music, I think, versus any other type of music is the fact that you don't necessarily have to be good to do it. And because of that, there's no barrier of entry to just try it and see what happens.
Right, exactly.
How long after going to shows did you guys start making music, or were you already kind of making music?
Nah, we weren't a band yet. Like I was doing my solo thing as a rapper, but we didn't actually. Maybe a few years. It was like a couple years because we started the band in like 2012, and so. I want to say, so we probably, around 2009, 2008, like, you know, that shit probably, you know, hit us hard. And then I was, again, like, already on my solo shit, just creating music. And, yeah, I just had this idea. Honestly, it wasn't even supposed to go that far. It was just like, yo, let's work on, like, an EP. You know, I had some ideas for some songs, and I just wanted him to, like, you know, throw a couple verses, unexpected verses that, because no one would, at the time, he was really just drinking and just a wow kid, like, you know, just going to the shows, just.
I was the person.
No care for, yeah.
Fucking shit up.
Yeah, so none of our friends would have taken it seriously, how we like, oh yeah, I put Edie on a verse, like, nobody would care about that, you know, but I was like, nah, let me take a chance on it. And then he wrote some verses that I actually thought were pretty decent. And I'm like, yo, let's just continue to work on this thing. And somehow we just like, yo, this shit kind of got a vibe. It's kind of doing something. Like, you know, I feel the energy here. And then it just became something that, again, it wasn't supposed to be. It was just us fucking around. But yeah, a couple years later, we're doing our own thing. We don't even know what we're doing. We're just trying shit. And at that time, there was no, like, you gotta remember, there was no genre bending, not like that. Mixing like the metal with the industrial, with the trap, with the rap. Like, nobody was doing that shit. So we were really experimenting, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just kind of taking all the influences that, you know, basically the ethos of it was the rap, because we from the East Coast. So we came up on that. So we knew it had to still be rap. But then we like, yo, the energy got to be up. Because when you go to a rap show, sometimes it's just a motherfucker walking around on stage. Just, it's boring. Like, but when you go to these shows that we were actually going to in the deep cuts of Brooklyn, Queens, wherever, the Bronx, wherever the fuck, the energy was amazing. So we like, yo, all right, So we gonna bring the rap and we gonna bring that energy, like on some like Onyx, like, you know, we gonna
Onyx Biohazard.
Yeah, we gonna take that approach. And again, we took that and we ran with it. And then even with the music, we didn't really know what we were doing. We just knew that we wanted to mix our influences, like, which we really love rap, and then we really love like the hardcore, you know, music as well. Like, so it's just like we literally just tried that shit, bro.
Yeah, it's been really interesting in the last 10 years watching music kind of catch up to you guys, even fashion wise and it's everything. Yeah, like you guys were so ahead of the game where things were kind of going to go. And like you're saying, like there were bands that obviously, like Cold World and stuff, that threw this kind of stuff in, but like you're talking about, like true genre bending, like you guys did, it wasn't necessarily accepted in punk at times.
Exactly. Yeah. And those things mesh, like, you know what I'm saying? Like rappers, you know what I'm saying? Always wanted to fucking, well, especially now, you know, rappers want to be rock stars and shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the funniest thing, but again, it's dope. It's just people trying shit.
And I feel like out of any genres, like more than metal, I think punk and hip hop have this sort of like, and hardcore, maybe even more than just pure punk or, you know, broadly termed punk, have this sort of like connection where they're both music's about finding reality and playing with reality. And they've got this sort of like symbiotic relationship with each other, even like where they start together.
It's from like, it's storytelling. It's like political. It's like, you know, what's going on in your neighborhood and your community. Like it's all of that. It's very similar.
Yeah. And it's like you're saying, it's political. Like obviously I guess folk music and soul music, there's politics throughout music history, but like these two genres, you can't separate the politics kind of from.
Right.
What was the first show you guys played?
I remember the first show we played was in Newark, New Jersey. It was a show because we were a collective first, and so we used to put together shows with like the homies, or we would book an artist from like New York, from wherever, you know. And we put this show together. It was like a Thanksgiving, it was like a holiday show, and we put this show together and we're like, okay, this is gonna be our entry point, you know what I'm saying, because nobody's expecting anything from us or whatever. They already know all the other performers, and this is going to be our entry point. And I remember that shit so vividly, actually, because at the time as a solo artist, I was a very shy performer. Like, I hated performing. Like, I love creating music, but like being on stage solo up there, it was just like, yo, people are fucking looking at, like, this shit is crazy. I can't get away from this, right? And then I remember this motherfucker just not caring. Like, you know, like he just embodied just who he was and the energy of the music and the space. And he didn't give a fuck, you know what I'm saying? And so that energy, so it's basically like, I always say this, like I put him on with the rapping, and then he kind of, his performance and his I don't give a fuck energy is what kind of, you know, started me up in this space, like, okay, we can really take it there performance wise. You know, this dude is willing to go there. So I gotta go there with him. I gotta meet him at that energy. So our first show, this thing, you know, he barely, like, he rapping, but he cared more about diving into the crowd and fucking shit up than actually performing the songs.
I had a bald head and a mustache.
Remember
that? I remember on a rampage.
Yes.
I had a bald fucking head, and a thick ass mustache.
Yep, but we were like all black and shit, and we were just trying to be mysterious, but
it went crazy. Oh my god,
it was actually great.
Well, there is a huge like leap that you kind of have to make as a performer, like you're saying. Like, it's so unnatural to be up there. That why not just embrace how awkward and weird and terrifying?
Exactly. And that's what it was for me. It was that defining moment that I was like, okay, yeah, you got to really embrace this. This is what it's going to be. This is what we're doing. Let's go. From that point on, we was on. Yeah.
How long after you formed did you guys put out that flexi disc zine kind of combo pack thing?
Uh,
shit, I think we put that in like 2014 or 2015 to LA, or maybe it was 2015.
It's 2015 it comes out.
Yeah. So we moved to LA at that point. So that's basically 3 years after. And we had like the single Bone Collector at the time, but I don't think we had put it out, or maybe we had just put it out that year or something. But yeah, it had been 3 years since we formed, since we put out anything.
What was the response like when you guys first started playing locally, kind of before moving to LA and everything? Like, was it immediate that there was a response from people, or did it take a while to kind of build that up?
Nah, the energy was there.
Yeah, because we already had a community of people that we was already throwing these events from and close friends. We got a nice community in New Jersey of just homies on top of homies and family. We really had something going on in New Jersey, man. We was like the Wu-Tang of New Jersey. So,
like, not to, you know, but dead serious though. Like, we was really doing that shit and really bringing, like, the young homies that, you know, that would normally be out getting in trouble fucking around. But, like, we created a platform for them to be able to, like, you know, a safe space to be at. Or if, like, yo, you an artist, boom, like, come fuck with us. Yo, I got a man's, I got a studio. Yo, we could work on the music. Not only can we work on the music, but now we could put you in front of like a few hundred people. You could perform that shit. Now you know you can get your wave up. And that's what it was about for us. At first, to be honest, it was more about that for us than it was us being the highlight. We did that after kind of everyone got locally popping, you know, young kids, you know, once they get that local fame and they feel like, I don't need you no more. I'm doing my thing. Like, I'm good. You feel me? And it wasn't until that happened. That's when we was just like, all right, since y'all good, I'm about to go do what I need to do now. Like, you know, and create an even bigger platform. But yeah, like we was already having fun. People were showing up to the shows. It was like a few hundred people already, like just us. Yeah. So the shows was always popping. Unless we was going out of town, like we go play in New York, obviously, because we done played some holes in the walls and there. Like,
and also in Jersey, we were booking our shows. And then, mind you, still we had this relationship with all these bands in New York. So we would book a Cerebral Ballsy, have them headline, and we open up. So, and then we getting all types of people.
Right.
We will book Japanther, have them headline, and we open up. So we was a little bit strategic about it on certain shows, but you know.
And at that same time, we're practicing. Like, we're booking these guys. They're better. They're more seasoned, but we're learning, but we're also getting better too. Because we're around that energy, it's pushing us to get better as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's all learning curves, all solid learning curves.
Yeah, like, you know, you mentioned the Badruins. I really think that's what happened in DC, and that's why there's so many great DC hardcore bands, is because steel sharpens steel. You're opening for this band, you're like, we got to get better. Like, we can't get blown off the stage this badly every night.
They crushing. Yeah, like, they crushing. So we got to make sure we at least can meet them somewhere. Yeah. Like,
do you think as a state, New Jersey kind of gets underdone as like in punk history a little bit? I've always felt like it's such an important state for punk history, and like a lot of bands that people assume are from New York are actually kind of from New Jersey.
Yeah, and Jersey and all culturally gets under swept. And I feel it,
swept, right?
Yeah,
right under the rug.
Yeah, if you talk about New Jersey and you think of punk, what's the first thing you want to think of? The Misfits. You know what I'm saying? Like, but a lot of Naughty by Nature from New Jersey, Ice-T from New Jersey.
We just played
an Australian tour with Dillinger Escape Plan. They from New Jersey.
So,
because it's New York right there, and New York is New York. So they get the shine, they get the glitz and glamour, but, you know, you peel the dirt back, New Jersey is, you know,
some heat coming out of
the place there. So,
a lot of innovation. Sorry, not getting you off.
Yeah, now you get it. Yeah, I'm like, we always just been underdogs.
Yeah, but maybe that also contributes to things. Like, maybe people have to shine brighter because of that.
You do. Absolutely. You do.
what prompted you guys to move to Los Angeles?
Just the opportunity to do this full time. Like, you know, we were like performing and working real jobs. Like, you know, he used to have the drum set in the back of his car, bro. He was riding around with the drum set, literally parts of it in the trunk and then the other parts in the back seat. Like, it was just permanently there. You know, and he was going to work like that. And then, so we would go, it would be work and then band rehearsal. And like, yeah, so when you hustling and you juggling work and trying to play shows and trying to make a name for yourself, it's tough. And then trying to get rest and trying to party and shit. Yeah. And so like, it's tough. But then when you get an opportunity, because the work that you put in, someone seen that and was like, yo, I could help you actually get to that level. If y'all just put y'all all into this, give me y'all 100%, I'm going to help you get there. And that's basically our manager. Like, when we met him, it was basically through a mutual friend who seen us play. Like, again, just like, you know, we tell this story all the time, but it was like guerrilla style, like Afropunk. It was one of the years they were... It used to be free, so people used to come through. It was easy, and we wanted to play. Obviously, we couldn't. At that time, we were already a collective. The dude that owned the festival at that time was a fan of what we had going on collectively. He didn't know that we were a band. He didn't get that part of it yet. And so he just let us come in and set up a merch tent and just like, oh, okay, y'all can just set up here, do what you need to do, and we're just like, we don't even got no merch. We're going to tell some homies to sell merch, but we just want to play. So we literally just snuck in with the drum set, with a PA, with all that shit into the festival, set it up. And we just waited to, I think it was like Mickey Blanco played. And then there was like a changeover. And then we just started blasting that motherfucker. Just started playing in the middle of the ground.
And all our homies knew we was playing, but nobody else. We only told our homies, like, yo, make sure y'all
just there. And just make sure everybody there. And then let's start that shit up. And then we just started fucking playing. It sounded like shit, but it was fun. It was great. Right? And then it was one of my homies who was in town with Doja Cat at the time. He was managing her. He was shopping her around to, like, different labels and shit. And he stayed an extra day. And he seen that shit. He was just like, dog, I ain't even know this what you was doing. Like, this is kind of cool, like, to me. This is probably the coolest shit I've seen in a minute. He like, actually, I know somebody in L.A. that's, like, really cool. Let me call him and see, like, you know, he might want to work with y'all. And then boom, so we were already going to LA because we knew somebody out here that just had a gallery and we were just gonna like just come out to LA to play a fucking DIY show.
Yep.
So we come out, we do it, and at the time it's us, Nate No Face, he was in a band called Crime Kills. So it was us, Crime Kills, and Doja Cat. This is before Doja Cat. That was the lineup. You know, so we played it in this empty gallery, bro, like literally like fucking 35, 40 people there. And we played the show and we meet Mike, the manager, like the following day. And he was just a fan. He was just a believer, man. Like at that time we had the single Bone Collector. We had the video shot already, but we hadn't put anything out. And he was just like, yo, you know, I'm gonna stay in touch with y'all. And then like, we working, we go back home. We like, dang, I thought this shit was going to happen. Go back home, you just still slaving away at the, you know what I'm saying, working the 9 to 5s. And then one day we got the call. He like, yo, I think I'm ready for y'all. I think we can make some, we can figure something out. We can figure out a way to do this full time and really turn the heat up. And that's all I need to hear, because I love what I do. I love making music. I've been waiting for opportunity like this. So once he put that battery in our bag, it was up. Like, yeah, I'll leave. Because motherfucking in New Jersey don't get it right now, so I'm out of here. You know what I'm saying? But we still put New Jersey on our back. Like, to this day, you know, you people ask, like, yo, where you from? The first thing we say is we from New Jersey. We always rep Jersey. And we've been in L.A. like 10 years now. Like,
yeah, there's like a real state pride, like you're saying, because of being the underdog, maybe.
Exactly, because nobody wins. Like, not many of us get out of there. So when you get out of there, you gotta be like, bro, you know how tough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like that. Kevin Smith, that film director, has made his whole career just making movies about New Jersey. Like, everything he does is just about the state.
Yeah, bro, because shit is tough, but they don't let you have nothing, bro. Everybody from Brooklyn, everybody from Queens and shit.
Yeah, it felt like when they legalized cannabis first, it was like, oh, this is New Jersey's moment, and then New York.
Right.
Ruined everything.
They can't let us have that.
Nope. So
even the New Jersey Nets, bro, like, they took the Nets. It's Brooklyn Nets. Telling you, like, if they could take our hockey team, bro, they would have took that motherfucker too. All we got is the hockey team. I'm telling you. Shit crazy.
Had you guys been on tour at that point? Like, obviously, going to New York. Other than that, I mean, before moving to L.A.?
Nothing. Never been on tour. We ain't even been out of the state, let alone that one show he just said in L.A., but anything other than that.
That was the furthest we went.
That's the furthest we went. New York and New Jersey. We had never touched D.C., never touched
Philly,
Boston.
Nothing.
Philly, nada. Just Jersey, New York. The one little random show in L.A., and that's it.
Yeah,
it's interesting when I think back on that time. Like, every city had kind of like a different scene. Like, it wasn't necessarily like you could go around and find. I guess Baltimore had a similar scene to what New York had at that time.
Yeah, it did.
But, like, apart from that, like, you're like Philadelphia, there's not really the same sort of thing happening at that point, and it's just very localized to certain areas.
Yeah. Very regional.
Yeah. What was your first national tour?
Oh, that's a good question. That might be the joint with Injury Reserve.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, it was.
That was the first U.S. one. Yes. I mean, we did some Europe dates, but the first, like, actual,
like, 30-day or 25-day proper tour, yes, it was with Injury Reserve, this rap group. They're from Arizona. So,
yeah. Like, what was it like at that point touring? Like you were saying, it's pre-sort of everyone being cool with genre mixing, and you guys are definitely doing something.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't necessarily fit neatly in any one world.
It was actually cool because Injury Reserve also had, like, they were making that sort of music, but slight, like, more in the rap space.
Yeah.
So they were already niche as well. So the kids that were coming out to the shows were nerds. Like, they already knew what they was getting, you know? And so it was actually really, really dope. And I opened it for all parties. Like, you know, because that
was their first tour also.
It was their first tour. So, it was good. I mean, before that, we went to Europe. And so we got a little taste of, like, being out for 2 weeks. This is what it feels like to be, like, playing a show back to back or being in front of a crowd that literally doesn't know you.
Yeah.
I think that's more jarring than anything. Like, because when you're around some kids that already listen to the album and they coming for you, then, you know, that's fun.
Yeah.
When you're playing somewhere where, like, they
you don't know.
Yeah. They know anything about you. I think that's where the challenge is. But every time it's always been good feedback. It's always been like, especially at that time. At that time, it was more so jarring. People were just like, what the fuck is this? Like, how are you mixing this with this? Like, wow, how? And why do I love it so much? You know what I'm saying? Like, who knew I needed peanut butter and jelly, like, right now?
It's funny, though, in Europe, there's almost like an aggression sometimes with that ignorance towards the band. You know, it's like very different experiences in parts of Europe than playing in America or Canada.
Yes,
or...
yes,
absolutely.
Yes,
yeah.
Nah, they accepted us with open arms. The only time we ever felt like underappreciated in Europe, we toured with Papa Roach.
That must have been a hard tour, I should say.
Bro,
that was a wake up call.
That was rough.
That was a wake up call.
That's one of them tours. Like, you know, when you always forget the great things, and then you remember, like, dang, that was a bad moment. Like, you remember those things. That was a bad tour. Like, every night these motherfuckers hated us. Like, we're playing in front of, like, thousands of people, And like after every song, you're just like waiting for like a clap. Usually there's like a, oh, okay, that was cool.
Yeah.
It would just be dead silent.
Like they didn't clap until maybe the second to last show. And that's because we was in
Spain. So when we got to Spain, we played a couple shows in like Barcelona and like a few other spots. And they when we got there, they clapped. And I was like, oh shit, fuck. Like yeah, finally like, oh some love. God. But in the UK and Europe, they just were so strict on like, we're here to see Papa Roach. Nobody and we don't give a fuck about
yes.
this shit right Nobody here. Else.
I had a similar experience opening for the Arcade Fire. And we did that tour in reverse. So we started in Spain and it was good. And then every night after, it was just worse. But I feel lucky, and you, I'm sure, can relate to this. How many people get the privilege of standing in front of a room of that many people that don't like you and actively don't get your music? It's like right. a rare experience.
It is. And it almost make us go harder. Like at first it was kind of fucking with me, but then I'm just like, yo, you know what? I'm gonna go even harder now. I'm gonna really piss y'all off. I'm gonna go even harder now.
Yep. And just I'm gonna talk some shit.
Yeah, just cause. You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It definitely. It adds an edge to the show.
Yes, it does.
You're kind of fearless at that point. You're like, I don't give a fuck.
Exactly. But, exactly.
Yep.
I'm here. You here. Fuck it.
Fuck it.
If you don't like this shit, go use the bathroom. Go have a smoke. But if you're going to stand here, then I'm going to fucking give it to you right here. Like,
I'm not quite evolved enough to say I prefer doing it as a performer. But I think watching a band in that situation, I love it. Like, I love when it's the band against the room, and it's like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah. Let's go.
It's got like a power to that.
It really does.
Were the Papa Roach guys cool at least?
They were great.
They were amazing, man.
They were sweethearts. Yeah. Like, those dudes were fucking solid. You know, we actually did a fucking shirt violating, like, cutting off.
I did a shirt, like, cutting off Jacoby's head.
And we sold that as merch.
We sold it as merch.
Like, and they at first kind of gave a shit about it, and then they was like, nah, it's cool.
It's funny.
It's funny, like it's cute, you know what I mean? Jokes, like, so yeah, like the same night that like we almost got into it with a fan, actually, he had to almost put hands. Actually, he did put hands on somebody. Yeah. We're not even gonna talk about that. But yeah, the bassist or the guitarist come out wearing the shirt. So I'm like, all right, look, these guys are cool. Like, you feel what I'm saying? If the fans don't fuck with us, but at least these guys who brought us here, they're fucking with us. So that makes it easier to get through the tour. Like, you know?
Yeah. Jacoby's the other great Lost interview of this podcast, because we were doing that Soundwave tour together one time. And he's like, I really want to come on your podcast. And I'm like, oh, sure. Yeah. Like, I'm in this room. Come up and do it. He's like, okay, I'm just going to go to the gym and then I'll be right up. And I've never seen him again.
Jeez.
That was like 10 years ago now. So I don't think he's coming.
Yeah, he's still at the gym right now. Right?
He's still there. He's ripped as shit. So I don't doubt that he was in there for a long time. So.
Yeah, again, those dudes are sweethearts. Yeah. They actually made it easy to get through the tour. Like, those dudes were fucking great.
Yeah.
It's just their fans sucked, respectfully.
Mm-hmm. It feels like a lot of older artists got what you guys were doing immediately too.
Yep. They immediately were just like, whoa, this is like a breath of fresh air. Like, this is something new. Because, you know, you've been around since like the fucking 70s, 80s, whatever, 90s. You've seen everything. Everything is just like a regurgitation of something else. Like, you know what I mean? So when you see something that's fresh and exciting and new, you know, you want to be a part of it. And sometimes your people aren't ready to receive that shit. That's just what it is.
Sometimes. Yeah, like I think there's like certainly, I don't like you're saying there's like I think I saw an interview with you guys. We were talking about Ice-T and how stoked Ice-T was to see you guys play, and it's like Ernie was on the podcast from Body Count, and like if you're a band like Body Count and you're just like kind of waiting, like okay, we did this thing. Where are the other bands that are going to be doing this with us to then be like, all right, now it's started. Finally.
Yes, let's go. Exactly. Let's go. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Nah, Ice actually put us on early. Body Count, one of their one of our first official shows as for
opening up for somebody bigger was Body Count.
Was Body Count. Our first like opening up for somebody bigger was Body Count. It was Body Count,
Madball, Wisdom and Change.
Yeah. And so we're just like, wait, fuck. Like, shit was dope. Fucking Madball? Like New York? Like, bro.
Shit was dope.
You just threw us in the lion's den, bro. Like, we gotta get our chops up. Yeah, like
that shit was dope.
That show must have been insane.
Yeah, yeah. It was. Yeah. I remember seeing Coco for the first time, like, and being like, oh shit.
Yeah.
This whole thing, like, cause this perception that you have, like Ice, like Coco, like, you know what I mean? And then you see them and you're just like, oh, this motherfucker's just mad cool. He was like rehearsing on stage when we walked in, and then he came down, shook our hand. Said what's up, chopped it up with us for a minute, and just told us how like appreciative of like just us doing the show. And but since then, he's been a fan. Like, and till this day, sometimes he still comments on some of the shit.
Mad cool.
Like, I'm like, bro, you,
mad.
Yeah, this is crazy, bro. I watch you on Law and Order.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like I like watch Law and Order, and you're playing a cop in here, and then you're on stage saying, "Fuck this, you know, this shit is great."
I remember, like, we played at some festival in Montreal, and we were all in trailers, and his trailer was like right beside our trailer, and I'm like sitting in our dressing room smoking weed, and I'm looking out the window, and like you're saying, he's on TV, so I'm just like looking at him like I'm watching a TV, right. And he notices me and gives me a little wave, and it's like, holy shit, he's real, like
right. Yeah,
watching a TV program.
Yeah, no, nah, it's bugged out, man. He's exactly who he is, yeah. Like.
But like, not every show went great, because I remember hearing that you guys got banned from the or thrown off the Warped Tour the first time you guys played it, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, we was fresh. We, like you said, we fresh coming from New Jersey. I'm fresh from being a wild maniac going to shows where there's practically anything going. You know, I done been to shows where motherfuckers is like fireworks in the venue.
Yeah.
I done been to shows where beer is getting splashed everywhere, and that shit is like
spray paint is like, it's just,
it's a loose dog in there.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Motherfucker got a bike in there.
With, like, bike it's in there.
All types of shit.
Somebody's flying on top of your head. You feel a boot hit your head, and it's all fun,
right?
Because that's where we come from. We come from the bottom. We come from the grit. We come from shit being gutter as fuck. So I was still in that mindset. And first of all, on record, I am not a fan of pop punk and emo. Like, when I got into the punk, like we talked about, I got into Bad Brains. And from there was Minor Threat, Black Flag, et cetera, et cetera. So when I finally did get a wind of the quote-unquote pop punk, I was like, this is not doing it for me. Plain and simple, I tried. I gave it a go, and I was like, this is not doing it for me. So we got, you know, offered to do the Warped Tour, and that was the kickoff show. That wasn't even the actual tour. This was like the show celebrating that it was going to be a full tour coming up.
Right. And mind you, this is about to be our first tour, period. We've never been on a tour. So this is our first leg.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And yeah, we just.
Shit is crazy.
We just, you know, we went out. And mind you, we were first of like 8 bands, and all the other 8 bands were those bands that I'm not too fond of. So I'm like, we're gonna fuck this shit up. And
yeah, we try to make like a statement, like, you know, you like, oh damn, they booked us. I bet, like, you know, this is what we do, and this is our style, this is our brand of play. And they was not feeling that shit.
Not feeling it.
they was not feeling that shit. Them motherfuckers was afraid. We started getting calls like the next day, 2 days later, 3 days later, then a week later, we was kicked off the shit. It was like not good.
Yeah.
You know, and then the conversation started happening, like, in a sense, like, yo, we gotta understand now, like, if we want to go to the next level, we got to understand what type of shows and how to calm down the chaos if we don't want lawsuits and certain things. Like, it got to a point.
Yeah, we had to learn.
We're
just coming in this fresh skin, like we're coming from a basement, anything goes setting to a more pro professional musician and how things operate on a higher level, which is, you know, of course it's good.
Right.
But we live and we learn, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, the element of chaos that, like you're saying, in DIY space, it's almost like necessary for the show to have that. But the bigger the space, the more danger comes into play with that chaos.
Yes.
And that's why I'm always amazed at certain bands, like Trash Talks, like some bands that are just like, wow, you guys are still on the edge of that line.
It's true. Yeah. That shit just feels dangerous every time. Every time, bro.
Yeah.
And that's the shows we used to go to.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in that was early, in 2010, 11 days.
Yeah, or like Dillinger Escape Plan. That's another band where I'm like, oh my God, guys, come on.
Right. No, it's pretty gnarly. Like, their earlier shows are pretty gnarly.
It's nuts. They have you know how I was just saying to him one, bands on YouTube have funny moments, or, an 8-minute video of funny moments, or telling the history. Dillinger has a YouTube video. It's 8 minutes. It says craziest moments. And it's just all highlights of everything you would think of. And it's great.
I did one show with Ben playing in this band that we put together with Ben playing guitar in it. And it was like wrestling a cruiserweight classic match. Like, he's just flying all over, jumping on top of me. I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like, it's just terrifying, but incredible.
Yes. It's good energy, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely but like you're saying, there is that risk associated with it too, and it just takes we had it one time where our guitar player jumped the crowd and split some kid's head open with his guitar by accident, just landed a little weird, and that's all it took.
That's all Damn, it takes yeah. right there, bro. And then yeah. that's the lawsuit. That shit is fucked.
Yeah, you better hope it's a fan. Please right, God,
seriously. seriously, because some fans are just like, whoa, man, I just got my nose broken by the and you're just like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yeah, you're not going to try that shit at a Papa Roach show in Munich.
No, not at all. Yeah. Motherfuckers is telling and suing and pointing fingers.
We played a show in Munich on that Arcade Fire tour, and I'm like, yo, anyone who's got weed, I'm a medical cannabis user, find me after the show. And someone came up to me after the show and they're like, you're lucky we didn't call the cops on you for saying that on stage tonight.
What?
I was like, oh, for real? And he's like, yeah, people call the cops on people for saying that on stage.
Nah, that's narked up. Where were you at again?
Munich.
Okay, noted.
Yeah, Bavaria's got different rules. You know? Noted.
Yeah. I'm like, we go to Munich, don't say nothing about no weed on stage.
Don't even bring it up. Just one time we played a venue and they're like, and we're like, hey, is there anywhere we can smoke? And they're like, yes. And they took us to a sub basement. Like, I was smoking in a hole in the middle of the grand of the earth.
Fucking come on, bro. Mind you, if you want to do fucking crack oil, you know what I'm saying?
You're okay.
They're like, oh, yeah, do it right here. You're good.
Is that weed? No way.
No way, bro. No. Fuck, man.
Yeah, I thought we're on a wave of legalization where they were just like, I'm like, you know, in 10 years, it's going to be legalized everywhere. Like, Thailand legalized, you know, it's going to. But that's now I'm like,
Thailand do it. You know it.
But now I'm like, I don't see England ever legalizing, or, you know, England's Utah when it comes to weed, I find.
You're right. Yeah. They are. I just think they probably won't slap you on the wrist as hard. Like, you feel me? They won't throw you under the jail, you know, but. But
don't
you
go in
Nah, they throw you a fine. I feel like they'll probably throw you a fine and shit. You know what I'm saying? They won't. They won't.
I had a friend who got caught bringing like 3 vape cartridges to Japan in his luggage.
That you gonna get fried.
Yeah, 3 months in jail, and no one spoke English to him for the first week.
Yes.
So he had no idea how long he was going to be in there, and then it was like 3 months, and then he said, "You're just never invited back."
Yeah, just revoke his shit completely, forever. Bro. You can never come here.
Damn,
3 months in jail, and you can't come back. Jeez.
There's some places that are just worth the tolerance break.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. 3 months in jail is that's the summer. I mean, I was gonna say, and then Asia, you just already know, they not playing with that over there. So you can't come with this, on you.
No.
It's if you find somebody there that you know what I mean, that know the ends, and you might could slide off and get a smoke in, that's cool. But coming there with it and they catch you, of course you're fried.
No go.
Yeah, and it's what country? What country would I want to be super stoned in more than Japan?
right. It's true. We were there we went for a couple weeks. We were there for 3 weeks, and it was the same for me because I smoke, and I wherever I go, I need to find the smoke, bro. I have to. And so it was killing me for the first 2 weeks, bro. I couldn't smoke, and I knew I was gonna be in turmoil if I did. And then, I don't even want to put nobody out, but somebody,
situated. It got better.
Exactly. I found something. You feel me? It got better, and that's all I needed. You know what I mean? But I basically had to take a 2 week detox. You know what I'm saying? And I took that because you if I'm going there, if it's getting locked up for fucking 3 months or I don't know however long, I'm going to just not smoke. I'm going to wait till I can get back home and smoke. It's just 2 weeks, bro. It's going to be okay.
sheesh.
Get high on melatonin. Just trip.
Right.
I don't want to keep you guys all night because I could ramble on to you guys forever. But I did really want to talk to you about that kind of where we're at right now in music and kind of coming out there now and touring, and how do you feel things have changed? Obviously politically we're in a very dystopic moment, but I feel musically it's kind of a cool time.
Yes. It's always, I guess that's the double-edged sword, right? Is because of the times we're in, that's what makes it kind of really impactful to be making this sort of music, right? When it's good.
Yeah, I mean, politically, there's always going to be some shit happening. It's never not some shit happening where everybody is happy and laid back and, haha, yay, beautiful day, it's picnic, it's satisfied. You know, it's always going to be some shit happening. From us, from day one, I think we all ready put our aggression into the music to let our sound butterfly into the existence. But there is a lot of dope music out right now, whether it's politically charged or just really good music. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think even if it's not necessarily politically charged, I feel like having a good time, like a DIY, like a kid finding a space to kind of make their art and do what they're doing. There's something political just in that act itself.
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely. And it's a beautiful time for that.
Yeah. It definitely I feel technology is also just making it easier for people to kind of create now too. And so I feel and you do see it, there are a lot more spaces now and all ages spaces popping up and new all ages spaces and a new wave of kids that are kind of picking up on this energy and taking it.
Or motherfuckers pulling up and be like, yo, we playing in a parking lot at Denny's.
Yeah.
Fucking pull up and rage.
Yeah, we're going to have a fake merch stall and we're going to make a show out of it.
You know?
You got to do what you got to do. Yep. You know?
You got to say some dope stuff.
Well, anytime you guys want to come back on this podcast, you are both welcome.
Yo, man, thanks for having us, bro. For real.
This redemption from the last one.
Yes, no wind this time, and no scorpions.
Yeah, damn. Damn. It was windy and there was scorpions. Jeez,
crazy, man. Sorry for the silhouette too. You know, we looking.
It's like, kind of fitting, almost like fits, I know. You know, like those fucking docks where the motherfucker is dark. Yeah, where he dark, and then it's like the voices always.
It's been really great.
Right.
Music lately. Kind of what we look
like. The gang.
Yeah, exactly. Gang.
You got like, you wanted to be mysterious. You got full mystery going on right now on this show.
Oh, you definitely
look crazy. I look crazy.